Radio Krishna presents Stories from the Mahabharata, or the History of Greater India.
Today's story is Lord Krishna's Hunger and the Enchanted Pool. While the Pandavas were dwelling in the forest, Duryodhan, their evil cousin who had usurped the kingdom, celebrated a great sacrifice with much pomp and splendor. He wanted to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice to proclaim himself emperor, but the Brahmin priests told him that he could not do that while Yudhisthira, the exiled Pandava emperor, and Duryodhana's father Dhritarashtra were alive, and they advised him to perform the sacrifice known as the Vaishnava instead. He accepted this advice and celebrated the Vaishnava with great splendor. But when the ceremony was over, the citizens began to talk among themselves that Duryodhana's sacrifice had not come up to even a 16th of Yudhisthira's Rajasuya in magnificence. The friends of Duryodhan, on the other hand, praised him and the sacrifice he had celebrated and likened it to those performed by the great Yayati, Mandatta, Bharata, and others. Karna assured Duryodhan that his Rajasuya had only been postponed till the Pandavas should be defeated and slain in battle, and repeated that his part would be the slaying of Arjun.
Until I have killed Arjun, I will not eat or take wine, nor will I refuse the prayer of anyone who asks me for anything in charity.
Such was the solemn vow taken by Karna in the assembly. The sons of Dhritarashtra were delighted to hear this vow of the great hero Karna, and they shouted in joy.
We feel as if the Pandavas have been killed already.
Spies conveyed to the Pandavas in the forest the news of the oath taken by Karna. Yudhisthira was greatly concerned, for he had a great opinion of Karna's prowess. Karna had been born with divine armor and was undoubtedly a mighty hero. One day, the sage Durvas went to Duryodhan with his 10,000 disciples. Knowing the sage's temper, Duryodhan carefully attended himself to all matters connected with the reception of the guests and was so lavish in his hospitality that the sage was gratified and told him to ask any boon. Duryodhan felt greatly relieved at having come so safely out of the ordeal, and when the sage asked him to seek a boon, it occurred to him that here was an opportunity of letting loose the irritable sage on the Pandavas, and he said,
"You have blessed us, great sage, by accepting our hospitality. Our brothers are in the forest. Why don't you go pay them a visit also, so that they may be likewise honored and happy?"
And suggested for a visit a time when he knew that all the food prepared would have been eaten and none would be left for the unexpected guests. The sage, who liked always to test people, consented to do so as Duryodhan had requested, and Duryodhan thought to himself,
"I feel sure that the Pandavas, who themselves live from hand to mouth in the forest, will be unable to feed or entertain the sage and his following, and they will incur some dreadful curse from that too hasty visitor for their want of hospitality. This will give me greater joy than any benefit I could have asked for myself when the sage offered a boon."
So Durvas went with his disciples to the Pandavas, as was desired by Duryodhan, as the latter were resting after their midday meal. The brothers welcomed the sage, saluted and honored him. Then the sage said,
"We will come right back. When we return, our meals must be ready, for we are hungry."
And they hurried off to the river with his disciples. As a result of the austerities of Yudhisthira, at the beginning of their stay in the forest, the sun god had given him a wonderful vessel which held a never-failing supply of food. In making the gift, the god had said,
"Through this I shall place at your disposal for 12 years as much food as is required for your daily consumption. Not till everyone has been served and Draupadi herself has taken her share will the vessel become empty for the day."
Accordingly, the Brahmins and other guests would be served first. Afterwards, the Pandava brothers would take their meals. And finally, Draupadi would have her share. When Durvas reached the place, all of them, including Draupadi, had eaten their meals, and so the vessel was empty of its power for the day. Draupadi was greatly troubled and perfectly at a loss to find food when the sage and his disciples should return after their ablutions. In the kitchen, she prayed earnestly to Lord Krishna to come to her aid in this hopeless predicament and deliver her from the wrath of the sage. At once, Sri Krishna appeared before her.
"Draupadi, I am very hungry. Bring without delay something to eat, and we shall talk of your problems later."
It looked as though the ally from whom she hoped for relief had gone over to the foe. She cried out in great confusion,
"Alas! What do you try me thus for? O Krishna, the power of the vessel given by the sun is exhausted for the day, and the sage Devas has come. What shall I do? The sage and his disciples will soon be here, and as though this were not enough, you also have come at this juncture saying that you are hungry."
"I am terribly hungry, and I want food, not excuses. Fetch the vessel and let me see if there's anything left in it for me."
So Draupadi brought it to him. A tiny bit of cooked vegetable and a grain of rice were sticking to the rim of the vessel. Lord Krishna ate them with satisfaction, accepting them as the soul of the universe. Draupadi was filled with shame at her slovenliness in not having cleaned the vessel free of all remnants. A bit had been left which had been partaken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Sri Krishna seemed replete with satisfaction after eating this solitary grain and, calling Bhima, told him to go to the river and intimate to the revered sage that food was ready and waiting for them. Bhima, greatly puzzled but full of faith in Lord Krishna, hastened to the river where Durvas and his followers were bathing. They were in great surprise to find that their ravenous hunger had given place to a pleasing fullness. They had all the comfortable cheerness of people who had feasted well. The disciples told their master,
"We have come here after asking Yudhisthira to prepare food for us, but now we feel well fed and full, and we couldn't even eat anything more, no matter how delicious it was. We feel as if we've already taken our meals. Tell Yudhisthira to please forgive us."
And then the party went away. The explanation is that as the whole universe is contained in Lord Krishna, his satisfaction with a single grain of rice satisfied for the time the hunger of all beings, including the sage. The stipulated period of 12 years was drawing to a close. One day, a deer was rubbing itself against a poor Brahmin's fire-kindling mortar, and as it turned to go, the mortar got entangled in its horns, and the affrighted animal fled wildly with it into the forest. In those days, matches were unknown, and fire was kindled with pieces of wood by mechanical friction.
Alas, the deer is running away with my fire kindler. How can I perform the fire sacrifice?
The Brahmin shouted and rushed towards the Pandavas for help in his extremity. The Pandavas pursued the animal, but it was a magic deer which sped in great leaps and bounds, decoying the Pandavas far into the forest and then disappeared. Worn out by futile chase, the Pandavas sat in great dejection under a banyan tree. The younger brother, Nakula, sighed.
We cannot render even this trifling service to the Brahmana. How we have degenerated.
Bhima replied.
Quite so. When Draupadi was dragged into the assembly, we should have killed those wretches. Is it not because we did not do so that we have had to suffer all these sorrows?
And he looked at Arjun sadly. Arjun agreed with him.
I bore in silence the vulgar and insulting, bragging words of that son of the charioteer, doing nothing. So we have deservedly fallen into this pitiable state.
Yudhisthira noticed with sorrow that all of them had lost their cheerfulness and courage. He thought they would be more cheerful with something to do. He was tormented with thirst, and so he said to Nakula,
Brother, why don't you climb that tree and see whether there's any pool or river nearby?
And so Nakula climbed the tree, looked around, and said,
At a little distance I see water plants and cranes, so there's got to be water around here somewhere.
Yudhisthira then sent him to fetch some water. Nakula was glad when he got to the place and saw there was a pool. He was very thirsty himself, and so thought of quenching his thirst before taking water in his quiver for his brothers. But no sooner did he dip his hand in the transparent water than he heard a voice which said,
Don't be rash. This pool belongs to me. O son of Madri, answer my questions first and then drink the water.
Nakula was surprised, but carried away by his intense thirst and heedless of the warning, he drank the water. At once, overcome by irresistible drowsiness, he fell down, to all appearance, dead. Surprised that Nakula had not returned, Yudhisthira sent Sahadev to see what was the matter. When Sahadev reached the pool and saw his brother lying on the ground, he wondered whether any harm had come to him, but before looking into the matter further, rushed irresistibly to the water to quench his burning thirst, and the voice was heard again.
Oh, Sahadev, this is my pool. Answer my questions, and then only may you quench your thirst.
Like Nakula, Sahadev also did not heed the warning. He drank the water and at once dropped down. Puzzled and worried that Sahadev also did not return, Yudhisthira sent Arjun to see whether his brothers had met with any danger.
And bring water,
he added, for he was very thirsty. Arjun went swiftly. He saw both his brothers lying dead near the pool. He was shocked at the sight and felt that they must have been killed by some lurking foe. Though heartbroken with grief and burning with the desire for revenge, he felt all feelings else submerged in a monstrous thirst, which irresistibly impelled him to the fatal pool, and again the voice was heard.
Answer my question before you drink the water. This pool is mine. If you disobey me, you follow your brothers.
Arjun's anger knew no bounds, and he cried,
Who are you? Come and stand up to me and I will kill you.
And he shot keen-edged arrows in the direction of the voice. But the invisible voice laughed in scorn.
Your arrows do but wound the air. Answer my questions, and then you can satisfy your thirst. If you drink the water without doing so, you'll die.
Greatly vexed, Arjun made up his mind to seek out and grapple with this elusive foe. But first, he must quench his terrible thirst. Yes, thirst was the enemy he must kill first. So he drank the water and also fell down dead. After anxious waiting, Yudhisthira turned to Bhima.
Dear brother, the great hero has also not yet returned. Something terrible must have happened to our brothers, and our stars are bad. Please look for them all and be quick about it, and also bring water, for I'm dying of thirst.
Bhima, racked with anxiety, hurried away without a word. His grief and rage could be imagined when he saw his three brothers lying dead. He thought,
this is certainly the work of the Yakshas. I will hunt them down and kill them. But oh, first I'm so thirsty. I shall first drink water, the better to fight them.
And then he descended into the pool. Once again the voice shouted,
Bhimasena, beware! You may drink only after answering my questions. You will die if you disregard my words. Who are you to dictate to me?
Cried Bhima, and he drank the water avidly, glaring around in defiance. And as he did so, his great strength seemed to slip from him like a garment, and he also fell dead along with his brothers. Alone, Yudhisthira wailed in a hell of anxiety and thirst.
Have they been subjected to a curse, or are they wandering about in the forest in a vain search for water? Or have they fainted or died of thirst?
Unable to bear these thoughts and driven desperate by an overpowering thirst, he started out to look for his brothers and the pool of water. Yudhisthira proceeded in the direction his brothers had taken, through tracts infested with wild boars and abounding in spotted deers and huge forest birds, and presently came upon a beautiful green meadow, girdling a pool of pellucid water, nectar to his eyes. And when he saw his brothers lying there, like sacred flagpoles thrown pell-mell after a festival, unable to restrain his grief, he lifted his voice and wept. He stroked the faces of Bhima and Arjuna as they lay so silent and still there. And he mourned.
Was this to be the end of all our vows? Just when our exile is about to end, you have been snatched away. Even the gods have forsaken me in my misfortune.
As he looked at their mighty limbs, so helpless now, he sadly wondered who could have been powerful enough to kill them. And brokenly he reflected,
surely my heart must be made of steel not to break, even after seeing Nakula and Sahadev lie dead. For what purpose should I continue to live in this world now?
Then a sense of mystery overcame him, for this could be no ordinary occurrence. The world held no warriors who could overcome his brothers. Besides, there were no wounds on their bodies which could have let out the life, and their faces were faces of men who slept in peace, and not of those who died in pain. There was also no trace of footprints of an enemy. There was surely some magic about it, or could it be a trick played by Duryodhan? Might he not have poisoned the water? Then Yudhisthira also went to the pool, in his turn drawn to the water by a consuming thirst. And again the voice, without form, warned as before,
your brothers died because they did not heed my words. Don't follow them. Answer my questions first, and then quench your thirst. This pool is mine.
Yudhisthira knew that these could be none other than the words of a demon, and guessed what had happened to his brothers. He saw a possible way of redeeming the situation. He said to this bodiless voice,
please ask your questions.
And the voice put questions rapidly, one after another. It asked first, what makes sunshine every day?
The power of Brahman.
And then it asked, what rescues man in danger?
Courage is man's salvation in danger.
Then the next question, by the study of which science does man become wise?
Not by studying any scripture does man become wise. It is by association with the great in wisdom that he gets wisdom.
The bodiless voice once again asked, "What is more nobly sustaining than the earth?"
"The mother who brings up the children she has born is nobler and more sustaining than the earth."
"What is higher than the sky?"
"The father."
"And what is fleeter than the wind?"
"Mind."
"What is more blighted than withering straw?"
"A sorrow-stricken heart."
"And what befriends a traveler?"
"Learning."
"Who is the friend of one who stays at home?"
"The wife."
"Who accompanies a man in death?"
"Religiosity, that alone accompanies the soul in its solitary journey after death."
"Which is the biggest vessel?"
"The earth, which contains all within itself, is the greatest vessel."
"And what is happiness?"
"Happiness is the result of good conduct."
"What is that, abandoning which man becomes loved by all?"
"Pride, for abandoning that man will be loved by all."
"What is the loss which yields joy and not sorrow?"
"Anger. Giving it up, we will no longer be subject to sorrow."
"What is that by giving up which man becomes rich?"
"Desire, greed, getting rid of it, man becomes wealthy."
"What makes one a real priest? Is it birth, good conduct, or learning? And answer decisively."
"Birth and learning do not make one a Brahmin. Good conduct alone does. However learned he may be, he will not be a Brahmin if he is a slave to bad habits. Even though he may be learned in the four Vedas, a man of bad conduct falls to a lower class."
"And what is the greatest wonder of all the world?"
"The greatest wonder is every day men see creatures depart to the abode of the Lord of Death, and yet those who remain, each one thinks that he will live forever. This is truly the greatest wonder."
And thus, the demon, bodiless voice posed many questions, and Yudhisthira answered them all. And in the end, the Yaksha asked,
"O King, one of your dead brothers can now be revived. Whom do you want revived? He shall come back to life."
Yudhisthira thought for a moment and then replied,
"May the dark-complected, lotus-eyed, broad-chested, and long-armed Nakula, lying like a fallen ebony tree, arise."
The Yaksha was pleased at this and asked Yudhisthira why he chose Nakula in preference to Bhima, who has the strength of 16,000 elephants. He had heard that Bhima was most dear to Yudhisthira. And why not Arjun, whose prowess in arms gave him protection? Why was it that he chose Nakula rather than the either of these two? And Yudhisthira replied,
"Oh, Yaksha, religion is the only shield of man, and not of Bhima or Arjun. If religion is set at nothing, man will be ruined. Kunti and Madri were the two wives of my father. I am surviving, a son of Kunti, and so she is not completely bereaved. In order that the scales of justice may be even, I ask that one of Madri's sons, Nakula, may revive."
The Yaksha was pleased with Yudhisthira's impartiality and granted that all his brothers would come back to life. It was Yama, the lord of religion, who had taken the form of the deer and the Yaksha so that he might see his son Yudhisthira and test him. He embraced Yudhisthira and blessed him. Then Yama said,
"Only a few days remain to complete the stipulated period of your exile in the forest. The 13th year will also pass by. None of your enemies will be able to discover you. You will successfully fulfill your undertaking."
The Pandavas had, no doubt, to pass through all sorts of troubles during their exile. But the gains, too, were not inconsiderable. It was a period of hard discipline and searching probation, through which they emerged stronger and nobler men. Arjun returned from austerities with divine weapons and strengthened by contact with Indra. Bhima also met his elder brother Hanuman near the lake where the Sagodika flowers bloomed, and he got tenfold strength from his embrace. Having met at the enchanted pool his own father Yama, the lord of religion, Yudhisthira shone with tenfold luster.
The minds of those who listen to the sacred story of Yudhisthira's meeting with his father will never go after evil. They will never seek to create quarrels among friends or covet the wealth of others. They will never fall victims to lust. They will never be unduly attached to transitory things.
Thus said Vaisampayana to Janmejai as he related this story of the Yaksha. May the same good attend the hearers of this story as retold by us.
You've been listening to Stories from the Mahabharata, the celebrated history of Greater India. Compiled by the great sage Vyas many thousands of years ago, Mahabharata is written in the Sanskrit language in verse form and is here adapted for radio and brought to you by Radio Krishna. Tune in again for our next presentation of Stories from the Mahabharata.